From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fourth day of June 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and trade in Chicago with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, Todd Hubbs will join us to help explain what's been happening in the world of trade, international trade that is, and the impact on commodity markets. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too. We'll be joined by Mark Russo at Risk Pulse in Chicago right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's turn our attention now to the commodity markets directly. Pete Manhart is here, filling in for Kurt Kimmel, who's away from the office this afternoon. Hey, Pete, thanks for being with us today.
That's great to be here.
Well, this is a rough day to fill in because there's a lot of bad news, a lot of red on the screen, and I suppose most of it has to do with news that not much happened with the Chinese and U.S. trade negotiations last week.
Yeah, last Friday we walked away without at a stalemate and talking about putting those tariffs back on China, and that, you know, a couple of weeks ago we said, oh, we're going to agree and we're going to get all this good more trade at $25 billion. Well, now that's all off, and you know, the Chinese are saying we're not going to do what all that you want, so we're back to them not going to buy as much. Last week, in fact, when we had the good news 10 days ago, China started buying a little again. Well, now they're back to the not buying any and getting it somewhere else, and that's really pushed it down. New lows today for the move. We went through some gaps in corn. We didn't fill a gap, I don't think, in beans, but we got fairly close. We got in it, but just didn't fill it. So negative news out of China. The good weather forecasts of not as much heat and good rains coming later in the week in a lot of the Midwest also helping push it lower.
So there'll be a lot of pressure on the marketplace to continue lower on Tuesday. Do you think we'll see much more in the way of losses, or will the market take a breather and try to recover some?
Well, with it down this hard, I would think we'd take a little breather and bounce a little, but without any positive news except just bouncing off of being down so hard, we could easily see it go down some more, but I would expect it to bounce a little here tonight and tomorrow, but not very far unless there's some positive news. If all of a sudden we're getting along with China again, that could push it right back up.
And was there any chatter in the trade about how low things could go if we don't recover the Chinese trade negotiations at all?
Basically talking another 20 on the beans and maybe another nickel to 8 cents on the corn. Initially today they were talking buying corn from 4 to 405. By the end of the day, I think that had kind of dried up, and now they're looking at maybe 95 for a low on that Dease corn.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Have a great one.
You too. That, of course, is Pete Manhart. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, President Donald Trump is defending his tough trade negotiations with China, Canada, and Mexico, saying that U.S. farmers have been treated unfairly. The president says on Twitter that by the time he finishes his trade negotiations, that will change, and big trade barriers will finally be broken. Mr. Trump has imposed tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from top U.S. trade partners, including Canada, Mexico, and the European Union, and has threatened tariffs on up to $200 billion in Chinese imports, raising the potential for retaliation. The hardline rhetoric comes as Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross returns from China as part of the ongoing trade discussions. The White House says the meeting focused on reducing the U.S. trade deficit by having China buy more agricultural and energy products. However, Secretary Ross came away Sunday with no word of a breakthrough that could avert a trade war between the world's two biggest economies. China issued a public warning that any deal is off if U.S. President Donald Trump makes good on his threat to impose those punitive tariffs on Chinese technology. Prior to Mr. Ross's arrival in Beijing, Mr. Trump set a June 15 deadline for naming $50 billion of Chinese products to be hit with a 25% punitive tariff and another apparent attempt attempt at trade brinksmanship. But the meeting on Sunday between Mr. Ross and Chinese Vice Premier Liu He was held against a backdrop of global frustration with the Trump administration negotiating style. A G7 finance minister meeting issued a rebuke to the U.S. with protest directed at Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. Mnuchin had been part of the first trade delegation to Beijing, which sought to pressure China to cut $200 billion from U.S. trade surpluses and stop promoting Chinese technology companies if Beijing wanted to avoid the trade war. The U.S. and China have threatened each other with $150 billion in tariffs. Well, let's stay in China for just a moment. Drought will further escalate in the southwestern parts of the Halijin province, China's top corn and soybean producer, located in the northeastern part of the country. Southwestern Halijin will experience high temperatures and no effective rainfall between now and the 12th of June. A heat wave and little precipitation has lasted since the end of May in the southwestern areas of Halijin, in an area that covers about 3 million cropping acres. Halijin produces about 13% of China's corn and over 40% of the country's soybeans. Let's come back to Washington now, where Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue last week alluded to an apparent proposal to fix the renewable fuel standard hardship waiver issue. Monday, a coalition of biofuel and agriculture groups petitioned the EPA to change its regulations to account for lost volumes of renewable fuel. Meanwhile, speaking to reporters during the 22nd World Meat Congress Thursday, Perdue said he recently spoke with EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt regarding the waivers.
We had a very good discussion the other day. I candidly told him that I felt like the waivers that were granted and the quantity they were granted this year was almost a circumvention of the RVO obligation there. The proposals that we're talking about now going forward are having any waiver requests prior to the RVO being issued and reallocated in that prospective RVO, which will kind of shut the door on that waiver circumvention in that way.
The proposal means anyone filing for a waiver must do so before the EPA releases the next year's renewable volume obligation as part of the RFS. Then the forgiven or waived portion of the RVO would be reallocated to the other refiners. The waivers are intended for small refiners who produce about 75,000 barrels of ethanol or less per day, or for refiners that can prove the RFS is causing the operation economic harm. A lawsuit filed a week ago by the ethanol industry groups alleges EPA is handing the waivers out like candy to refiners, with more than 30 refiners receiving waivers under the Trump administration compared to 2 to 3 waivers a year previously. Effectively, the lawsuit says this reduces the RFS by 1.5 billion gallons, down from the 15 billion gallon requirement. And that's a look at what's been happening in Ag News for the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. Todd Hubbs now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in agricultural trade and the marketplace. And I said agricultural trade to begin with because that's what's been happening in the market, certainly for the day. A rough weekend between the negotiators in China and the United States, or at least a rough weekend for the announcements that came out of what took place last week. China says nothing. The United States says nothing, and we have imposed, or will impose, I suppose, by maybe the 15th day of June, unless something changes, some real punitive trade tariffs, and that has spooked the trade in Chicago, the CME Group, lower for the day. How does this all play out, in your opinion?
There's a lot of uncertainty in these trade negotiations, not only with China, but with some of our traditional trading partners, Mexico, Canada, the EU, with the steel and aluminum tariffs that were imposed on them. The administration's really injecting a lot of uncertainty into trade negotiations, and I wish I knew the answer to that question, Todd, but I don't. It looks like right now that the China tariffs are probably going to come to fruition based on everything we've heard. Who knows at this point? There's just been so much back and forth on it. But if it does, it's going to really impact agricultural prices across the board, because China laid out the retaliation was going to be on a lot of ag products, and that included soybeans. And we haven't been seeing a lot of soybeans shipped to China in the last few months, and that will just continue. You know, when you think about the size of the crop Brazil's producing, they have a source other than us. And at relatively competitive prices with our export price level. So this weakness we're seeing in markets basically just reflecting all that uncertainty across the board. Mexico is one of our major importers of corn. Now, I have heard nothing about them implementing a tariff on corn, but we have heard pork products and other ag products be mentioned, which doesn't help corn or soybeans either, or our livestock farmers. So right now, all this trade uncertainty, without any kind of resolution, you're going to see probably weakness across the CME.
Yeah, so just to recap what has happened to this point, as you mentioned, steel and aluminum tariffs were put into place on imports from Mexico, Canada, and the European Union late last week. The Chinese negotiations broke down to this point. They may or may not move forward, but it appears that the Trump administration is willing to potentially impose some tariffs there. Again, that would be by the middle of this month or June the 15th. So rather than try to armchair quarterback what happens with the marketplace, because there are a lot of fluctuations, looking further out, what are the potential dangers if this type of trade negotiation goes on for, I don't know, 3 months or 6 months or a year, but in terms of lost opportunity over the long run? Because the president says, don't worry, in the future it'll be better than it is today. But I'm wondering if there's any historical precedence for that. I suppose if he negotiated with China in particular, because they're not a free market society, if you can negotiate, yes, you're going to buy agricultural products, they could simply say you're going to buy ag products from the United States. But other places, this is the free market in action, and they search for the best price.
Yeah, the longer it goes on, you know, you see more and more uncertainty in the market, and you start to see supply response possibly from other places that, you know, are what we would consider to be not as big a producer as the United States in both corn and soybeans. You know, the former Soviet Union, you know, you have Brazil and Argentina, you have parts of the EU with a lot of their crop bundle, Canada. I mean, the idea that we will always have these markets there, it feels comforting to say that. And I think over the short run, if we can come to some kind of resolution, we'll sort of move back into the space we've always been. But, you know, productivity-wise in China, you know, if we're not seen as a reliable trading partner in the long run, they've been investing a lot in their ag sector. They've been sort of flat in production in corn and soybeans for a long time. You know, when you look 5 to 10 years out, is that still going to be the case? I doubt it, very seriously. And so what happens to our markets as we move forward? We are seeing population growth. We're seeing income growth. We're seeing strong economic growth in the United States. These are all good things. But, you know, starting to mess with the trade relationships and the trade networks, injecting that uncertainty, and starting to think about how do our international markets evolve over time, it's fraught with peril trying to forecast that kind of impact. But it's not good, that's for sure. And I would rather it be solved sooner rather than later, and I think most of the farmers out there feel the same way. The longer it goes on, and if tariffs are implemented, if the steel and aluminum tariffs stick, if we get into a major trade war, you're going to see a lot of uncertainty and price pressure.
Thanks much.
Yes, sir.
That, of course, is Todd Hubbs. He's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. We're now joined by Brian Stark. He is with the Andersons. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
A rough day in Chicago. How did basis handle it?
I think the basis has been steady to firming trend here in the last week or so, and I expect moving forward, if the trend of comfortability where crop conditions are continues to push the board lower, that basis may have to do a little bit of the work to continue to keep grain moving in the pipeline, because certainly we've noticed a drop off in willing sellers here in the last couple of days as the board's declined.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of quick questions. So we know that the news about the Chinese and U.S. negotiations, coupled with the aluminum and steel tariffs that were put on the NAFTA partners, Canada and Mexico in particular, European Union as well, had an impact today in Chicago. How much of an impact do you think that was as compared to, and I'm guessing broadly a lot, as compared to the good conditions they expect to see again this week for the ratings that come from USTA?
I think the biggest impact is what you described with the negotiations on tariffs. That's the overhanging part of the market. When the rhetoric seems to be going better, the market tends to stabilize or even recover and rally. And I think right now that's been more of the headline than necessarily some of the conditions. I think obviously we're unknown as to what corn acreage finally got planted. The key state I've been looking at here the last couple of weeks has been that southern tier of Michigan, where they've been really wet. And I know that the trade will be looking at that as well. And I think even as good as the ratings are, we can't afford to come in at the end of June's report and see a cut and lose any more corn acres than we've already intended to plant back in March. So to me, the foreign negotiations have been the overhang of the market, and whatever daily rhetoric you get, I think is generally the trend of where the market's going to go on that day.
Anything else in the marketplace that you want to make sure we know about today before I get your numbers from you?
I think that's pretty much the theme. I think right now farmers are going to be in a holding pattern, and we did not have a very good technical close today below the 200-day on the July corn contract. So hopefully we'll be able to find some stabilization. But right now, short-term negative mostly, and guys are going to have to be a little patient here moving forward.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn tonight is 364. New crop corn is 381. Cash soybeans 972. New crop beans 989. And new crop July 18 wheat is 510.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
You too. That, of course, is Brian Stark from the Andersons. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. Mark Russo is now here from Risk Pulse. He's in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mark. What a beautiful day it is across our part of the world.
Yeah, it certainly is, Todd. Definitely a very favorable early summer weather here, meteorological summer, as we have overall normal temperatures and a lack of rain across much of the Midwest. As we look ahead here over the next couple of weeks, we are going to see variability in temperatures across the Midwest, but no sign of any extreme heaters such as what we had last week across the Midwest, especially the eastern Midwest. We had a couple of days there over the holiday weekend where we climbed into the upper 90s. The western Midwest will be biased the warmest here coming up, but even there, the most extreme conditions, i.e. temperatures above 95 or even 100 degrees, will be further west in areas of the plains and even on into the intermountain west. Now, from a rainfall standpoint, we are going to see the pattern turn more active, and so while temperatures will be variable, but with some warmer days, but nothing extreme thrown in there. There will be thunderstorms developing in areas of the northern Midwest and areas such as Nebraska, the Dakotas, Minnesota, and then those storms will work their way south and east, really across the heart of the Midwest. Nothing excessive here, but overall, the Midwest is becoming a little bit more active again. But when you add up everything for the next couple weeks, rainfall amounts look to come in near normal across the vast majority of acreage.
Looks like the hard red winter wheat harvest has begun in Texas and will move northward. Let's check in on some of the other regions. What crops are you watching?
One winter wheat area that still bears watching, and we've highlighted in our weekly calls, that is Ukraine and Russia. We've seen the past 30 days drier than normal across much of that region, and the pattern looks to stay that way over the next couple of weeks as well. So that's going to draw down soil moisture for winter wheat developing, which is still ongoing here, likely for a few more weeks. But also for corn development in its early stage of growth. Now, with the drier than normal conditions, they will not be combined with any kind of significant heat, at least over the next 2 weeks. So there will be a lack of extreme heat, but the drier than normal conditions certainly bears watching here.
I've heard China's had some problems with the beginning of their growing season.
Yeah, especially those northeastern provinces of Heilongjiang, Jilin, and Liaoning. There have been a few pockets that have missed out on rainfall, but coming up, they will have opportunities to improve. In fact, actually, compared to last week, the outlook for the next 15 days actually looks more favorable for rain. So those dry pockets will have really good opportunities to see improvement, and that will help improve soil moisture here for early crop development of corn and beans in China.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse. He's in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us for this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'll hit the road starting tomorrow for St. Louis at the CUTC. That's the Corn Utilization Technology Conference. We'll come to you from there, and then we'll be in Sonoman on Wednesday and Springfield on Thursday for a couple of Roche Ag marketing meetings. These are at some grain elevators, so check out the website at willag.org for all the details and where and when. I'm Todd Gleason.